Welcome, Lund Loyalists, to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's Johnny.
Oh, yes. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. Brock Talks. There you go. With Feather Pen. Brock is going to speak to the media this afternoon, early this afternoon. And we will probably break in and do live coverage of Brock speaking what Brock says, because all things lead back to Brock. So he's going to talk today, and we'll talk about a few of the things. And I went down a couple of rabbit holes today. I went down a Brock rabbit hole, which I'm going to have to do a totally separate video on, because it's just, it would take over this show today, episode 145, if we did it. So keep your alerts on today. Make sure that you're subscribed. It is John Lund, John Lund Unleashed, formerly of KNBR. I like to reset things every once in a while. 30 years in the radio business as a talk show host, program director, reporter, all things. I did it, writer, all those kind of things. So thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Monday through Friday, 8 a.m.-ish on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, as well as the Bay Area Sports Collective. Maybe you're watching on, I need to get going on Instagram so I can say that I'm on Instagram, and I am on Instagram now. We're on Instagram, we're on X, we're on LinkedIn, Facebook, my personal page, or John Lund Unleashed, however you're watching, whatever platform you're watching on. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We never take your viewership. Or if you're listening on the podcast later, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast, your viewership, your listenership, very much appreciated. Thank you very much. All we ask is make sure you subscribe on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube and the Bay Area Sports Collective, both those YouTube channels, please. Also, make sure you hit us with the like before you get out of here today, because that helps the algorithm that we're doing decent stuff. And also make sure that you have those alerts on, because I am going to do a totally different show, probably on two more times today. I'm going to do a totally different show on this rabbit hole that I went down. I'll tease it a little bit and tell you exactly what I did, and then look out for the entire show that I did, and then, or that I'll do. And then Brock Purdy's going to speak this afternoon. So what I'll do is, what I do when we have those kind of situations, I'll cut those things up, cut those clips up for you. I'll play them for you and react to some of the things Brock says. Obviously, Kyle Shanahan's going to be there, and John Lynch. And so we'll play some of that for you and get some reaction from what Brock says a little bit later. So a busy day, probably at least a couple more times that we'll do the show beyond this show. So we'll do a tight hour this morning, and then we'll put a couple of more things on the agenda for later on today. So please make sure those alerts are on at John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. All right, it is episode 145. Thanks for joining us. Always appreciate it. Before we get into everything today, always like to make sure to take care of our fine sponsor, and you just heard, it's Reappell, Reappell Sports Medicine. Dr. Reappell does an awesome job with my wife in terms of her pain, and this morning I just saw her. Again, she doesn't have to put ice on. We have a whole freezer that's actually dedicated to like ice packs and everything, because she did the stem cell with Dr. Reappell right there in San Ramon, Dr. Jeffrey Reappell. Look it up, put it on Google. Jeffrey Reappell, Reappell Sports Medicine, Reappell, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, amazing. Her shoulder, her elbow. I told you about a month ago, we were walking in Vegas. She's like, I have Dr. Reappell to thank, because she's had foot problems, all those kind of things. And Dr. Reappell and stem cell treatment has changed all that. He's one of the first doctors in California to do stem cell. So, you know, he knows what he's doing. And if you're in the East Bay, it's a no-brainer. If you're not, absolutely, positively worth the drive. Dr. Reappell will take care of you. Make sure when you make that appointment with Dr. Reappell, you tell him that I sent you over, and he'll take extra good care of you. There's the QR code right there. So if you want to click on it with your phone real quickly, you can make that appointment or go right to the website and check out Dr. Jeffrey Reappell and Reappell Sports Medicine. And they do all sorts of other things. I told you I'm doing the low T with Dr. Reappell, and it is awesome, because I only have to do it every 3-4 months. Blood test. Oh, you're this low. It gets you up to where you're supposed to be. You feel better. Your metabolism's faster. You're in a much better mood. Your wife or significant other is happier. You just feel like yourself again. I cannot recommend it highly enough. So again, tell Dr. Reappell when you make that appointment. You can Google Dr. Reappell, Dr. Jeffrey Reappell, R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E, Reappell, in San Ramon, that I sent you over, and he will take extra good care of you. So if it's low T, which I'm doing, or if it's stem cell, which you've always thought about, but you weren't sure, I'm telling you, it has made a world of difference with my wife. So thank you to Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle and Riopelle Sports Medicine for sponsoring John Lund Unleashed. All right, let's get to episode 145, Brock Talks New Deal. Like I said, early this afternoon, about 1:30, he's going to speak. We'll have that for you right afterwards. So probably in the 2:30 range. And what I'll do is I'll cut about 5 or 6 cuts, write a piece along with that at johnlundunleashed.com. And I'll release a video for it. So you want to see that. You want to know what Brock says. And plus, that's about the time you're like, I don't really want to work anymore today. What's on YouTube? And so check that out in your afternoon lulls. So we'll talk about that. Plus, I'll kind of tease a little bit what I did with Brock. Does three signings save the offseason? Those were the final three, and everybody's feeling pretty good about it. Hayden Birdsong, very good last night. I'd call it a solid outing. I think early on, and we'll talk more about this, he was kind of not going after hitters. You know, as a reliever, you have to go after hitters. You can't screw around. You can't walk guys. You don't have much time in there. Pedal to the metal. Let's go. I thought the Birdsong was early in the outing, trying to be too fine and trying to hit all the corners and everything. Bro, you're gassing 98 and more. You've got nasty bend to your pitches. Go after them. Say, go ahead and hit it. And once I think he relaxed and started doing that, and I think that probably J.P.M. Martinez, the pitching coach for the Giants and others, probably said, man, dude, your stuff is so good. Just go at him. You know, and once he started to do that, the pitches weren't piling up so much, and he really got after guys. And then the bullpen. Randy Rodriguez looks nasty, and Ryan Walker looks like he's back, and Duvall and that whole thing. And they end up getting a 3-2 win last night. Nice win. Can Birdsong solidify that number three spot in the rotation? I think he can, based on last night. The can't doing this. This was the second thing that I did down a rabbit hole today, and it's going to just tell you. I know you know on the surface how bad it is from a catching and first base perspective, but they're not going to do anything about Patrick Bailey. So how bad is it at first base? It's bad enough that you should overpay on a trade, and I'll explain why. Steve Kerr was in the backyard of Tom Tolbert with Bay Area Sports Collective, and you need to be on Bay Area Sports Collective for this very reason. I clipped out one cut from Tom and Steve's discussion yesterday, and we shall discuss that. Oklahoma City gets game one over Minnesota. That was the Timberwolves team that played against the Warriors. That was not a good team last night. Nixon Pacers MVP is going to be announced tonight. We'll get into that. Mike Malone's already made his decision. Boy, how quickly they turn. Random stuff happens throughout the show, and I got a sweet, clean, family-friendly caboose pistol for you, so make sure that you stay around for that. So, as always, we're busy, but as I told you before, we're going to be on 2-3 times today. We got a lot of stuff going on today. Good morning to everybody in the chat, by the way. If you're over on X at John Lund Radio, if you're on Instagram at John Lund Radio, if you're on Twitch, if you're on LinkedIn, if you're on Facebook, I love having you. Love, love, love having you. And I appreciate you making the time. But if you'd migrate over to John Lund Unleashed, you could be part of a great community. As I'm saying, good morning to everybody. Everybody looks good this morning. By the way, if you want your stuff on the screen 100% in the chat room, just hit me up with a super or something like that, and we'll get on to it. But it is great to see everybody on the board this morning. Good morning, good morning, good morning. So let's get into this stuff. Let's start with Brock Purdy, as we said we would. Is that the cover? Haters going to hate. No, that's a different one. That's this one right here. Brock talks. And so I went down this rabbit hole this morning, and I have a lot more of these. But as I started to do this, I said, this is going to be a totally separate show. It can't be this show because it'll take over the show. We'll be here all day. We won't be focused. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of a teaser what I'm going to do later. And like I said, Brock's going to talk at about 1:30, sort of about 2:30. I'll have all the clips for you, and I'll have a comment on it, and I'll write all about it and everything. So make sure that you're back. 2:30-ish is what I'm going to shoot for, but we'll see how, you know, maybe Brock's late, whatever the case may be. It's how quickly I can edit these things and so forth, and then cut them down into little bite-sized pieces for you. But hopefully you can see this. That's pretty small, so I apologize for that. But here's the deal. As far as Brock Purdy's numbers are concerned, it's only three seasons. The third one, like I've told you before, you can call it an excuse or an explanation. He tried to do too much. Guys were injured. He plays within a system. Everybody talks about it, you know, blah, 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 blah. But even in that respect, now his starting record, as you can see right there, was 6-9. And one of his superpowers was his record was so good. But even in a quote unquote down season, he completes 66% of his passes for 20 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. But what I did was see the 17-game average down there. So through three seasons, two good ones, in which he went to an NFC Championship game in a Super Bowl. 27 touchdowns, 11 interceptions for Brock Purdy with a quarterback rating of 104.9, which would be the highest of all time is all. But he's not worth the contract. Okay, national media. A 104.9 quarterback rating, which is not a perfect metric. I understand that, but still, it's a way to measure quarterbacks, and it's pretty darn good. And I don't really care about yards per game. I care about yards per attempt. Yards per attempt I care about, where he's almost at 9 yards for his career, which, again, would top the list, 9 yards per attempt. It's not about how many yards you throw for, because quarterbacks who throw for you a lot of yards, that means their team's behind a lot. You know, you'd rather run the ball. You'd rather have balance. The 49ers, when they run the ball 30-plus times, they're nearly unbeatable. We know that number under Kyle Shanahan. So I don't want my quarterback throwing for 400 yards. But I do want a good yards per attempt. And Brock Purdy is always high on that metric. Yards per attempt matter. Yards per game do not. So anyway, by every metric, if you look at that, 27 touchdowns, 11 interceptions with a 104.9 rating and an 8.9 yards per attempt for Brock Purdy for his career. So what I did was I went down this rabbit hole. And I'm not saying, I don't want people to misconstrue this, all right? I'm not saying that Brock is better than these players. But when you just don't spew it like the national media and these talking head shows do in the morning, and they just spew it. He's got so much talent around him. Okay. You sure a lot of these quarterbacks don't? You know, Joe Montana did, Steve Young did, Peyton Manning did. I mean, you go through the history of time. We've already had this conversation. But just by that very metric, right, Josh Allen's a better quarterback than Brock Purdy. There's no doubt. If there was an opposite of Brock Purdy, it would be Josh Allen. He throws it through a wall. He's super athletic. He runs over guys. He's huge at 6'5", 240. I mean, he's the polar opposite. First round pick, 7th overall, polar opposite of Brock, right? So Brock's 27 touchdowns, 11 interceptions at 8.9 per attempt and 104.9 for his career. Josh Allen's at 30 touchdowns, average season, 30 touchdowns, 13 interceptions with a 93.4. Yards per attempt, 7.3. 1.6 yards is massive, all right? Now, Brock is not the runner. Brock is not the athlete. Brock can't throw it through a wall. Josh Allen was perfect for Buffalo in that weather. I'm not saying he's better than him. I'm not saying Brock Purdy is better than Josh Allen. He's not. But what I'm saying is that Brock's at 27 touchdowns, 11 interceptions with a 104.5 and almost 9 yards per attempt, and he's at 7.3. Not saying he's better. But what I'm saying is that in this age that we're in of metrics and stats and comparisons, we don't look at any kind of numbers when it comes to Brock. They just say Brock's too small. Brock was 262. Brock's not good enough. So what I did was I took these metrics. That's just Josh Allen for one. Really good player and better than Brock Purdy. But the numbers don't say so. The numbers say Brock's actually been a more efficient quarterback in his career at almost more than a yard and a half per attempt better than what Josh Allen is. Now, Josh Allen runs it a lot. Josh Allen gets out of trouble. Josh Allen makes great plays. I'm not saying he doesn't. Never been to a Super Bowl. Had really good teams. Never been to a Super Bowl. Now, they don't give him a lot of times as much talent to work with. Like the last couple of years, they get rid of Diggs and certain guys, and Gabe Davis goes out. Look, Josh Allen's better. I'm not saying he's not. But when you look at the metrics of all the quarterbacks, comparable quarterbacks. Now, look, Lamar Jackson's different. Jalen Hurts, to a certain extent, is different. But still, I've got the metrics of all the great quarterbacks over a 17-game average. And you know what you find out? And I'll do this on a separate show when we talk about Brock Purdy and his comments today after he does a press conference later this afternoon. Brock Purdy's got great numbers. And last year, he wasn't as good as he was in his first 2 years. And I think that Brock Purdy's going to be the player he was in his first 2 years and not the player in his third year. It's explainable what happened to him in his third year. And again, the national media can call it an excuse. And I'm not going to put him up on the board because I told you exactly what was going to happen. And I told you the other day that somebody popped in the comments. And by the way, love the comments. Just hit comments right underneath the show here. I'd love, whether it's positive, negative, you don't have to agree with me. I love to think and go, oh, okay, you bring up a great point. I'm not one of those people that says, I've got to be right 100% of the time. That's not me. But if you look at it across the board, I can tell you without even showing you, but I did a nice little graphic in a separate show, so I'm going to do it. There's not a lot of difference. And for a lot of quarterbacks that you think are better, he's actually a lot better in a lot of the metrics. And what matters to me is wins matter. And his first 2 years, he was really good. Last year, he was 6-9, no doubt. His first 2 years, he won a ton of games. Went to the NFC Championship game, got hurt, and led the team to a Super Bowl. And with one defensive stop, he has a Super Bowl ring. It's only because of 262. It's only because he doesn't have the size and the arm strength. That's what it comes down to. Everyone wants the arm strength, the number one pick, all those kind of things. I can tell you without showing you, Trevor Lawrence, his metrics against Brock Purdy, not even close. But no one has a problem giving Trevor Lawrence $55 million a year and $200 guaranteed when Brock got 53 and 181. Who's a better quarterback? The guy that was picked first overall and everybody expected to be the next Andrew Luck or Brock Purdy? Who would you take? Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy's better. Oh, no. He has Kyle Shanahan. No. He has offensive weapons. Jacksonville's tried to get offensive weapons. They put Doug Peterson with him. Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl. There's no excuse. He should be better. Even guys like Joe Burrow. Again, Joe Burrow's a better quarterback than Brock Purdy, just to tease ahead to it. If you look at the average season that Joe Burrow's had and the average season that Brock Purdy's had, and you didn't tell me which guy was which, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. Brock Purdy's got better numbers, over a 17-game average. Now it's only three seasons. But I'm putting in last season when everybody said he was so bad, when he didn't have Christian McCaffrey, when he didn't have Brandon Ayuk, when he had a poor offensive line. He didn't have a bunch of advantages last year. He had a rookie in Ricky Pearsall that he hadn't really worked with and was throwing the ball to quite a bit. When he gets McCaffrey back, when he gets Ayuk back, how's he going to play? Is he going to be better? Yeah, he's going to be better. But it's all about Kyle Shanahan, and it's all about the weapons. Like Patrick Mahomes doesn't have Andy Reid and didn't have Tyreek Hill and doesn't have Travis Kelce, and they drafted Xavier Worthy in the first round, and they've drafted running back after running back after running back, and they've put a bunch of money into the offensive line. And I'm not saying he's better than Mahomes. He's not. He's not better than Mahomes. But when you look at just the numbers, which everybody is numbers crazy now in sports, Brock Purdy's numbers are better. Or at least as good, but yet he doesn't get any credit because then there's an excuse. When it's convenient to use the numbers, the national media uses the numbers. When it's not, they don't. The numbers say what they say. The first 2 years, Brock Purdy, over those 2 years, was one of the best quarterbacks in football. And then last year he had a bunch of injuries, but that's an excuse, not an explanation. To me, it's an explanation, and I think he's going to be better next year. So again, we'll hear from Brock Purdy today. He'll say all the right things. It's not going to be like anything dynamic is going to happen. No news is going to be broken. But as I said yesterday, I think that it's huge that these three deals get done. It sets a tone. You have three leaders on your team. Your quarterback is in that dead period, like I said, between training camp and kind of that, you know, early June, as soon as they end OTAs, and you have that mandatory time off, about 6 weeks. Brock's going to get everybody together. I haven't heard this, but I know it for a fact. He's going to get everybody together. They're going to throw. It's going to be kumbaya. They're going to come back for camp. And I think things are going to be a lot different. The tone is going to be a lot different. So, again, just stay tuned for that. I'll do that a little bit later. I just did a chart and a graph, and I think you'll be amazed by everything. But, again, someone will find a way that that's an excuse and not an explanation, but we'll see. But it's only three seasons with Brock. I understand that. But like I said, most players, most quarterbacks, they get to know the league, and they get better and better and better and better. Brock hasn't played his best football yet. I don't believe that at all. All right, episode 145. So Brock talks new deal. We'll have that later for you. I got that thing where I went down a rabbit hole and did some comps on 17 games averages. I'll do that with Brock as well. Does three signings save? That's where I'm at right now. And this is a question for you. Does three signings save? Because what's really interesting is I did that whole, I think I have that covered. I did this. This is up at johnlundunleashed.com, and I did this separately, the 49ers' final and official offseason report card. I did that a couple of days ago, and you can see in the left side there, Fred Warner, Brock Purdy, George Kittle, with the coins flying all over the place. Those three signings get done late. They lose Debo. That's Brant Boyer. That's Dre Greenlaw. And up in the right-hand corner, right-hand side, I should say, that's Mikael Williams. So the offseason report card, we already talked about that. But if you want to go through that video, I don't know, it's only maybe 15 minutes, maybe a little bit less than that. That's at johnlundunleashed.com. And the big question in the comments and the thoughts I got at John Lund Unleashed and on the comment section and at John Lund Radio on X was that very question was, I don't know that those three signings saved the offseason. A lot of people were disappointed, especially at the beginning of the offseason. And I completely understand that, you know, losing the guys. I explained it, and I explain it in that report card that I'm not as upset over the players that they lost and people as they actually delve deeper into this, because when those players were lost, people got emotional and they didn't really look. And of course, the national media didn't look when they said that the 49ers had this awful offseason. And I thought, okay, What was losing Leonard Floyd or Hufanga or Hargrave or Debo? And then people dove into it and they went, yeah, those guys weren't very good in 2023. And it was like, yeah, Jed didn't just clear the decks because of Brock Purdy's contract. And again, we'll find that out today. We'll look at the, we'll know the breakdown and all those kind of things, but the numbers aren't going to be huge at the beginning of the contract. They thought that they needed to trim fat at this particular time. And I'll say this again, there were people in the media, the local media, that should know better, that people respect and think they know what they're talking about, who are at a lot of the, who are at these press conferences, who is saying that the 49ers don't want to win, that the 49ers aren't trying to win, that the 49ers are taking a step back. Oh, really? So that's why they signed Brock Purdy. So that's why they signed George Kittle. So that's why they signed Fred Warner, because they weren't trying to win. Do you know what this family is about? Do you know what the York family is about? Do you know what the Eddie D was all about? This is the same family. It's the 49ers. Now the rules have changed and you can't sign everybody and you can't have the depth that you used to have, but the 49ers don't take seasons off. You know, I'm not saying that they're the Yankees or the Dodgers or anything like that, but they don't take seasons off. They don't say, you know what, we're just going to hit the reset button. We're doing a bit of a rebuild. They're not doing that. They were never doing that. And I told you the whole time. I talked to people within the organization who said the jackass single person, really, who said that, and others who, like sheep who followed behind it, or like, they don't know what I'm talking about. You watch. They did a reset on players that they didn't feel like going into the future were going to be worth what they were going to be paid. And I agree. Do you think Aaron Banks is worth what Green Bay paid him? No, he's not. Hufanga was hurt a lot. Ward had PTSD and was never going to come back here. Debo Samuel's best football is behind him. Those are the players that they lost. Hargrave was a complete bust. Complete bust. You wanted those players back? There were a bunch of big name guys who underachieved last season, and they didn't want to pay moving forward. That didn't mean that they were going to take a step back. That didn't mean that they weren't going to win or try to win. And so all of a sudden they sign these guys who they value to long-term extensions, and yet I don't hear any of that talk anymore. That person and those people who said that the 49ers weren't trying to win, weird how that's kind of gone away, that whole narrative. But there was one person in particular that kept pushing it. They're not trying to win. They're not trying to win. They're taking a step back. I've heard this. I've heard that. From who? Because I never heard that. So, look, you can say that you didn't like the offseason. I get it. From a free agent signing standpoint, they signed, and I put this up yesterday, they signed like five guys who were like free eight for her special teamers. I get it. Your special teams got to get better. You brought in Brant Boyer, good move. You brought in four or five guys for your special teams so that you don't have punts blocked and punts returned, and you drafted a couple guys who could return kicks and punts. Okay, I got it. You kind of overkilled right there. And the main culprit of the reason why your special team sucked so bad last year was number four, your kicker. He's still here. And I know Greg Joseph is here and some guy out of Louisiana Lafayette who won the Lou Groza. That, bring in a real kicker. Like, if you brought in Nick Folk, I know he's 47 years old, but he's the equivalent of Robbie Gould. From like 53 in, he'll hit it. If you brought him in, then I'd take you seriously. Greg Joseph is not going to challenge Jake Moody. And I don't think the big 250-pound kid from Louisiana Lafayette is either. I think they're going to go with Jake Moody. Jake Moody's really going to have to kick poorly in the preseason to lose the job. And that's too bad, because I think they should have brought in real competition, and they haven't. So I'm not singing Kumbaya and say that they had a great, 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 great A-plus offseason. I told you, I gave them a B-minus, because they signed the guys they needed to sign, and they signed them on time. And I didn't mind the guys that they lost outside of Dre Greenlaw. I didn't mind the guys that they lost outside of him. But I was completely underwhelmed by the guys they did sign. And I thought there was other guys out there, especially veterans along the offensive or defensive line, that I think could help them, that they wouldn't have had to overpay for. Because going into this season, you may have three rookies on the defensive line start. And if they don't start, they're certainly going to be major contributors. Mikel Williams has got to start. Alfred Williams has got to start. C.J. West has got to be a major part of that rotation. That's a lot to put on rookies. Nick Martin has got to be a player out of the gate. That's a lot to put on him, a mid-round pick. The secondary, I'm a little nervous about. You may have to have that kid out of Kansas State actually play a major role. That's a lot to put on rookies. Four or five rookies. Hey, we need your contributions, not next year, now. Not in three or four games, now. That's a lot. That's a lot to put on rookies, especially guys who aren't first-round picks. And I told you, it's a dartboard. And it might take Mikel Williams a year or two. He's 20. I don't know if he turned 21 yet, but he's young. And he played the least amount of snaps of the edge rushers last year. That means he's inexperienced, just to remind you. Might take him a year. Mikel Williams might be something. But if you draft a guy who's 20, I'm just telling you this up front. If you draft a guy that's 20, who had the least amount of snaps of any edge rusher in the draft last year, might take him a minute. Even if he played at Georgia in the SEC, might take him a minute. So everybody's going to go, oh, he's a bust. Well, he's got to play right now, right away. And to me, not that I'm saying that they shouldn't have drafted him, but I am saying that you need a guy right away. Are you sure that's the right guy? I mean, long-term, you think it is, okay. But what that might mean is, can an edge guy shake free a veteran that you can use at least with in concert with this guy? Like, I'm not saying Trey Hendrickson. That's way too expensive. Not going to happen. But is there a guy out there that his training camp moves on and the team says, geez, this veteran guy, you know, can you get a guy who can do that just in case as insurance? I don't think there's enough insurance. Safety, I'd think the same way. They need some insurance at safety. Fifth-round pick out of Kansas State because Mustafa's hurt and Hufanga's gone. That makes me nervous. Is there a guy like not Tashaun Gibson himself, but remember a couple of years ago they picked up Tashaun Gibson? That would be big. I think that would be a big thing. So anyway, give me your thoughts on all of that stuff. Again, Brock today is going to speak, and we will have that for you. So make sure that you let's see. Yeah, I am a little bit fired up today. I am because I'm excited to hear Brock speak today. I like when the only thing I'm not pissed off. Fired up is a good word. Because it's funny because, like I said, I'm not saying I'm privy to anything that's going on with the 49ers, but I know a few people and a few things that are going on. And I can tell you that when certain people said that the organization was basically taking a year off, people were not happy. This team is going balls to the wall constantly. It doesn't mean because you're not, you know, because you have decided that Hufanga and Debo and Hargrave are not players moving forward, that either because of injury, age, or ineffectiveness, or a combination of all of those things, that for some reason that even local media thought they should throw money at them. The Niners are like, Mustafa's here. Okay, he's hurt right now, but he's a better option. Renardo Green last year was better than Charvarius Ward, and he was never coming back because of what happened off the field. And his wife wasn't even in the Bay Area, wasn't even in California after that happened. So he was never coming back. Dre Greenlaw was the one that they screwed up. Hargrave, they cut before any of this process even happened. He did not fit. They screwed up. They realized it. They let him go. They drafted two guys. And I got news for you. Collins and West are going to fit what they're doing better. Hargrave was a penetrator, quick kind of a guy. He didn't work out. Now what they're trying to do philosophically inside is take a couple of big loads and keep them off their linebackers. So let Fred Warner flow to the ball. Nick Martin is a small dude. He's like 5'11", 220, maybe 220. Not a big dude. Looks like a safety. And they want him to flow to the ball, and they want big guys to occupy blockers, because if they don't occupy those blockers inside, then they're going to get to Nick Martin, and they're going to swallow him up, and they're going to get big gains. So that's the philosophy inside. Big dudes who can take on a bunch of blocks. Evan Anderson, the dude who wears the funky helmet, 66, he's going to be one of those guys inside. They're going to, philosophically, they want guys who are going to occupy blockers. That's what they're going to do. That's what Elliott has to do. Givens is a little undersized for that, but they want guys who are going to occupy blockers. And then Mikel Williams is a good edge setter, supposedly. So anyway, I was only fired up because of that. So anyway, that's what's going on. Brock talks new deal, does three signings, save. That's where we are. Do I have any video or anything like that? Like I said, later on, I will hit up that piece that I have. I think that's it. Okay, that's good. As far as Birdsong last night is concerned, I'm not taking a victory lap. I said that he should be in the rotation. I said that I'm not going to say they were wasting him in the bullpen, but the kid's a starter. The kid's a stud. You can see, and they were talking throughout the game last night about his mentality and everything, and I've told you that already. I spoke to him numerous times. I spoke to him out on the patio last year. I've told you that story already. You can speak to a young kid like that, and you just know. Because so many guys come out onto that patio and would speak to Greg and I, and they just, yes, sir, no, sir. You know, they were nervous or something like that, but not him. I mean, he came out there, and like I said, I had an extra 5 minutes to talk to him. I was sitting at the table, and he, you know, as a guest, he was kind of sitting on the end. And so I just kind of turned to him, and we were talking during a commercial break, and I could just tell the kid was mature. The kid was smart. The kid, you know, very engaging. He'd look at you eye to eye when you were talking to him, just a very mature kid for his age. And you could just tell nothing was going to be too big for him. And last night wasn't. It was like, you know, okay. And like I said, if I had a criticism especially early on. The pitches were piling up a little bit. And they talked to the pitching coach, JP Martinez. He said he's going to go about 75 to 80 pitches, and that's about what he finished up with. He almost didn't finish the fifth inning, but he did a nice job. And then the bullpen came in and did what the bullpen's going to do. And the thing that's intriguing about that is I think that he had to go back to, okay, I've been a reliever, pedal to the metal constantly. And then he kind of had to pace himself a little bit. And I think that what happened was, I think somebody spoke with him and said, hey, man, you got 98 in your pocket. You got a couple of other pitches that got some serious bend to them. You got to challenge hitters. You can't nitpick on the sides and can't be too fine with this stuff. And your pitches can't pile up. Have the mentality that you had when you were a reliever. Get after guys. They can't hit your stuff. And so I think that he kind of changed that a little bit. And then he started being more efficient with his pitches. And remember, I think he's a horse. I think he's a guy who's going to throw 100 pitches routinely, like a Logan Webb type of a guy. He's big. He can do those kind of things. He can be efficient with his pitches. He can challenge guys. He's got a repertoire. So I think that last night was, hey, 75, 80 pitches. Let's ramp him up. Probably have a couple more of those type of outings. And then after that, I think he's going to be a 100-plus pitch guy. And now all of a sudden you've got Webb and you've got Ray and you've got Birdsong. And as I said, I think that Verlander was miscast. I said this right when Verlander was signed. You go back to any of the shows right when Verlander was signed. I said if they think Verlander is going to be a two, they're going to be greatly disappointed at the age of 42 coming off a neck injury. But if they think that Justin Verlander, the Giants, if they slot him right and say, okay, you're going to be a four, which means you'll give us some good production. There'll be some clunkers. You know, you may have an injury. We may have to replace you a couple of times. That's what Verlander is going to be. I think Verlander might pitch to like a four ERA or four plus ERA this year, 415, 420, whatever, 420. I don't know how many games, like that doesn't matter anymore to anybody, but he's gotten bad luck. There's no question about it. But as a four, that's what a four is. And then five can be Roop or it can be Harrison or at some point it can be Wisenhunt or whatever. Your five can be inconsistent. But what Birdsong showed last night is he can be a three, and he was on a limited pitch count. He can be a three. Verlander could be a four. And then your five is whatever. And that will be good enough with this bullpen, right? So I was encouraged by last night. Love to get your thoughts on Birdsong. I would call it solid. I'm not jumping out of my skin for it. I think he was solid. I think he kind of got his feet under him as a starter again. But yeah, absolutely an encouraging outing. That's what I would call it. The can't doing, keep doing this part. Let me just, again, I went down a rabbit hole that sometimes I do these things and I'm like, what are you doing? That's stupid. But this is what I did. And you know this because I've been talking about it and ranting about it and blah, blah, blah all the time. But look at this. So the Giants at first base and catcher. So total. All right. This is the two positions combined, catching and first base. No, Bailey's not going anywhere. Right. That's why getting a first baseman is so critical. So between the two positions combined, okay, five home runs, 37 RBIs, 61 of 332. They're hitting 184 at first base and catcher. OPS 552. All these things are last in baseball. They have 107 strikeouts in those 332 at bats at catcher and first base this year. That's 32% of the time. So a third of the time they're striking out. Having said that, Wilmer Flores at first base has 14 at bats, four home runs, nine RBIs. He's hitting 357 with a 1541 OPS just at first base. All right. So when he plays first base, 5 of 14, four home runs, nine RBIs. So first base and catcher without Flores. So if Flores is not playing first base, one home run, this is combined, one home run, 23 RBIs, 56 for 318, that's 176, a 407 OPS, catcher and first base. That's two positions in your order, okay? First base without Flores. So this is just first base, mainly Lamont Wade Jr. So Flores is 5 for 14, four home runs, nine RBIs, only 14 at-bats. The rest of the at-bats at first base, 27 for 155, a home run, 14 RBIs, a 174 batting average, and a 392 OPS. Think about that. Flores has 14 at-bats with four home runs and nine RBIs. The rest are 155 at-bats, 14 RBIs and one home run, and a 174 batting average. Flores in 14 at-bats has more production at first base than 155 at-bats of the other guys. All right? That's how bad it is. And Buster Posey knows these numbers, and I say this almost every single day. I sound like a broken record, but you cannot continue to have this happen. It can't happen. Like last night, I'm watching the game, and I'm just like, it's unbelievable. Flores strikes out, or Wade strikes out a couple times. Bailey hit a ball when they had a couple of guys on. Like, first at bat, like, he doesn't even care. Like, just get me out of the box. Swings at it, rolls it over to first base, innings over. And he wants nothing to do with the bat in his hands. He, like, is trying to get the bat over as fast as he can. Like, take a pitch. Relax for a second. Like, what are you doing? It's brutal. So at first base, they're hitting 174 with a 392 OPS. If you take out Wilmer Flores, four home runs in 14 at-bats while playing first base with a 1541 OPS. They have a less than 400 OPS. So catcher and first base combined, five home runs, 37 RBIs, hitting 184 with a 552 OPS, and they strike out a third of the time. So, I mean, those are bad numbers. I mean, horrid numbers. And if you're Buster Posey, you're just sitting there going, are you sure there's nothing? You know, Bryce Eldridge isn't ready. I've mentioned numerous times about Rhys Hoskins and just overpaying with the Brewers. And if you look at the standings, they're a sub-500 team. They're not going anywhere. They're probably at this particular point, I'm sure that Buster's called the Brewers, and they've said, we want Carson Wisenhunt, and the Giants hang up on him. Like, I get it. You're going to have to overpay at this point. You're not going to do that. And you're not giving up Bryce Eldridge. And I'm sure they've said, hey, we'll give you a David VR or somebody stupid. And they're just like, I mean, no offense to David VR, great guy. Interviewed him many times. I shouldn't say he's stupid. He's not stupid, but it's like, you know, we're not taking David VR is my point. But there's got to be something, you know, and I know I sound like a broken record, but Lamont's either has got to go to the minors and you got to find something. And are you sure that you don't have anybody at Sacramento that could play some first base? Are you sure? Casey Schmidt last night played third. Schmidt, I'm sure, can move over to first base. Chapman a night off, which is very rare. So you'll see some more Casey Schmidt over there. He got a hit last night, which was good to see. Maybe, just maybe, he could come through. But what it screams to is there's no organizational depth. You don't have a first baseman or anybody who can grab a first baseman's glove and have more production. I mean, that's embarrassing production. And it's not just last. It's last by a lot. Hitting 174, having a sub-5 OPS minus Wilmer Flores, who has hit four of his home runs in 14 at-bats while playing first base. It's just, it's pathetic is what it is. And the organization, like, nobody's calling the organization out. Like, there's no one in the organization. I mean, I'm not saying bring up Bryce Eldridge. I'm not. But having said that, could he be worse? Could he be worse than the numbers I just showed you at first base? Like, honestly, they've got to have that conversation. They're hitting 174 with a 392 OPS with one home run from that position. And that's a power position. If you take Flores' numbers out, they have one home run, 14 RBIs, hitting 174 with a 392 OPS. Bryce Eldridge, I'm not saying Bryce Eldridge is the answer because he's not. And he's been injured and all those kind of things. But could he be worse? You know, could putting Casey Schmidt over there on a regular basis be worse? I mean, you're wasting his defensive talents because he could be playing somewhere else, but he's not going to play second because instead of Fitzgerald, they're short, or third. He's not going to play in any of those positions. But would it really damage things all that much if you just said, look, Casey Schmidt's going to play first. We're going to put Lamont Wade Jr. in the minors. Go find your swing. Because beating your head against the wall and having at bats for him every single night is awful. And we're so nice as a fan base, we're not booing the guy. God, if he were in any kind of a hardcore baseball market, St. Louis, Chicago, New York, Boston, anywhere else, they'd be booing the shit out of him. And no offense to the guy. I'm sure he's a nice guy. We've had him on the show before. Nice guy. But Jesus, you're trying to stay in the wild card hunt? I mean, the Dodgers are the Dodgers, right? They got swept by the Angels. I understand that. Yamamoto last night was ridiculous. And they end up beating Arizona. But it's like, really, you're going to try to stay in the race with that? Because you're not going to bench Patrick Bailey. And I understand why. Caught a couple of runners last night. Plays great defense. I understand that. Great play by Willie Adames, the one where he picked it out of the dirt. Like, a nice play. I mean, he caught a couple of runners last night. I understand his worth. I get it. You know, stealing strikes, I'd still rather have a robot ump, and that becomes irrelevant. But, you know, he's great at framing, all those kind of things. Well worth it. I get it. But then you can't have a first baseman with one home run total with a 174 batting average and a sub-400 OPS. That's not going to work. And it tells you about the lack of organizational depth. But it also just tells you, Buster Posey, man, again, I said this yesterday, love the player, love the person. I differentiate to the executive. And right now, the executive, Buster Posey, fucking do something. It's embarrassing. Do something. Like, I don't, that's your job, man. I know it's hard. I know the deadline's end of July. I get it, man. I understand. But scour it. There's got to be somebody in the minor leagues. There's got to be somebody like that's better than that. Because you can't have a catcher and a first baseman being that bad at the bottom of your order. It's just that bad. Oh, he'll come around. All right. Keep telling yourself that. It's been a long time since it was late night Lamont. Let's just put it that way. Oh, I do have, you know what I did? I didn't play this. This was NBC Sports Bay Area last night. Let's put ourselves in a better mood. This is NBC Sports Bay Area last night with a montage of Mr. Birdsong. I didn't play this.
Right across the letters. And for Wood, who saw that ball so well, he just could not keep that top hand on.
Runner goes. Swing and a miss. Bailey's throw. Got him. Got him. There's your line for Birdsong.
And his evening is done, and he was out.
Mike said he was outstanding. He was good. He was really solid. He's going to be better. I mean, that's the whole thing. And I think in the back of his mind, too, I'm only throwing 75 to 80 pitches. You know, when he's relaxed and it's like you're our starter and you're going to go as long as you're good, you know, you're going to go 100-plus pitches. Don't even worry about it. Just get after guys. But you can see just the bend on his pitches. Just nasty. And then he's throwing 98 as well. I mean, the kid's going to be good. And he's got the mentality. Kid is going to be really, really good. So anyway, there's the story on the Giants. I'm sorry that I have to go off on this catching and first base thing every single day. I apologize for that, but it's frustrating to watch games and be like, there's nothing they can do. I'm sorry. It's only, you know, May 20th or May 21st. We just can't do anything. We have to sit through this for two more months. That's a bad excuse. There's got to be something. There's got to be something. And I know you don't want to overpay. I get it. But man, as I say in the chalkboard there, can't keep doing this. All right. That's the Giants side of things. Love to get your thoughts on it. And again, it is John Lund Unleashed. Thanks for joining us. YouTube, make sure that you are subscribed. Make sure, as I said, we're going to be on later today when Brock Purdy has his press conference at 1:30. We will cut all those clips up for you, and then we will discuss. So that'll be something that we'll do later on today. Plus, I told you I did this thing where I went down a rabbit hole with Brock versus other quarterbacks and a 17-game average. I'm going to put that together as well, so make sure you have alerts on, and we'll have a couple other things that we'll do today. As far as Kerr and Tolbert are concerned, let me make sure that we don't have anything on the board for the Giants, and then I'll move on to Steve Kerr. He was in the backyard with Tolbert yesterday, which is really, really cool. I dug that. Let's see. Buster what? Buster Buzz has got to start facing difficult conversations with some vets. 100%. And thanks, Kenny. Here's the thing. Is that, like I said, I love Buster the player. I love Buster the person. But you're in a wild card race, and you don't have time. Okay, the Dodgers are going to win the division. I get it. The Padres were just swept. Padres lost yesterday. That's great. They're going to be there. Arizona, we just saw them. They're going to be there. Philly's going to be there. The Mets are going to be there. Atlanta's going to be there. The Cubs are going to be there. There's a number of teams, and you don't have time to screw around. Let me give Lamont Wade Jr. 10 more games. What? You don't have that. I can guarantee you right now, at the end of the year, the Giants will or will not make the playoffs. I think that that's going to be less than five games, maybe less than three games, whether they make it or not. Probably like three, I bet. Two or three, actually. That's what it normally comes down to. How many times during Farhan's regime was it just a few games? Remember the shortened season? It was like one game, right? Like, it's going to come down to two or three games. So that's why I get so pissed about it, because you don't have time to screw around. I know there's 162 games, so that gives you a little bit of leeway. But when you already give the division away, and I know right now it's fairly close, but the Dodgers are going to Dodger, man. And you know what they're going to do. If something's going on near the deadline, they will add. You know that, 100% guaranteed. They'll add a significant bat or pitcher or reliever or whatever the case, whatever they need. If there's an injury, they'll add. Add. They're going to do that. They're going to win the division. So then you're dealing with every other good team in the National League who doesn't win their division. Like I said, maybe the Mets win the East, the Cubs win the Central. So every other team you're dealing with. And there's three playoff spots, I get it, beyond that. So, you know, Philly will make one. Atlanta's going to make a run. We talk about this almost every single day. The Padres, the Diamondbacks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you're going to be in that mix, and it's going to come down to about two or three games at the end of the year. And at the end of the year, you and I are going to sit here and talk like we do every single day. And we're going to go, damn, if they just wouldn't have let Lamont Wade Jr. be in the lineup for so long. or if they wouldn't have waited, or damn, you know. Again, there's certain guys in your minor league system you're not going to touch. I get it. And I'm not asking you to go out and get an elite first baseman right now. But what I am, and this is what your job is, Buster and you know the whole crew in the front office, it's not just Buster. And if I'm Buster, I'm telling my scouts and everybody that will listen, pound the pavement, find me somebody. That's your charge. Pound the pavement, find me somebody. Is it really hard to find somebody who can do better than 174 with one home run and a 392 OPS? Because that's what they're doing non-Wilmer Flores days at first base. One home run, 174 batting average, 392 OPS. There's not someone better. Casey Schmidt's got to be better than that, doesn't he? I mean, within your own organization, there's nobody better. Now, Schmidt was hurt, and I get it, but he's back. I'm playing him at first base. No doubt about it. I think Lamont's hitting, what, 172 now? Way to go, man. So, you know, way to go. Awesome. Great. He's going to come out of it. All right. Let's move on to Steve Kerr because this is fun. So this is Steve in the backyard. I'll double check to make sure. Let me just hit some other things here. Again, I'm not angry. Like I said, I'm not angry with Buster Posey. I'm saying organizationally, there's got to be something that they can do. Or there's got to be somebody languishing in like that maybe is an overaged prospect at 27 or 28 that you can get for next to nothing that you're just like, well, let's just take a flyer on this guy. I mean, one thing, and I'm not a Farhan guy, and you know that. We've talked about Farhan a million times. But one thing Farhan would do is he would churn. He would churn. And right now, Lamont Wade Jr. wouldn't be playing. I'm not saying he's playing every day, but he's playing a lot. And there's under Farhan at least, and this is all I'm asking really and here's where I would blame the organization, is that he needs a break. He needs to go down to AAA. He needs to go down somewhere, Arizona. He's got a hamstring tweak, and he's got to go down and work. There's something he's got to go down and work. He just doesn't look like the same guy. He's not seeing the ball as well. He's swinging through pitches he would normally hit. Those kind of things. There's got to be a tweak, okay, at the major league level. And it doesn't mean that your hitting coach or that your approach of trying to fix players is broken. It means the player is broken and maybe there's another eye that just needs to be seen. And we've seen it a lot. We've seen it in baseball. Guys will go down. We've seen it in hoops. Remember when Jordan Poole went down to the G League and worked on some stuff and all of a sudden he came back and he was Jordan Poole for that period of time. Like it just sometimes it's a different set of eyes looking at someone, or maybe it's just that player being able to relax. Hey man, go down to AAA or go over to Arizona or go to Richmond or go somewhere and just relax for a minute. Okay. Get your stroke back, relax, keep pounding your head against the wall up here. And people are, you know, they're not booing because they're way too nice here, but they're grumbling. Lamont Wade Jr.'s up again. Yeah, not working. So I think as an organization, it's like at the very least, do that. Like give them somebody different to talk to, something. Anyway, all right, I'm done with that. All right, this is Steve Kerr yesterday. And if you missed the whole conversation, this was cool. Watch this yesterday. It was great. It's the Bay Area Sports Collective. Not only should you be subscribed to my channel at John Lund Unleashed, but please make sure you subscribe to the Bay Area Sports Collective, and that is Polly Mack and Creative Tony, which they do the night flight tonight. It is Wednesday, so they'll do the night show tonight. The Tom Tolbert Show, Rod Brooks, and Quality Hang. But here is Tom with his former college teammate, Steve Kerr, and they're in the backyard drinking some beers. And here's Steve Kerr talking about the immediate future of the Warriors.
We instantly became one of the best teams in the league when he got here. And so we're going for it these next 2 years. We're not in a position because, you know, Steph's 37.
Yep.
Jimmy, 36. Draymond, 35. It's not my job. It's Mike's job.
Yep.
To determine all this stuff. But can you imagine trading away your next, like, seven drafts? You know, with a team of, you know, built around three guys who were 36, 37. Yeah. Like, I mean, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah. Right. So I think what we're doing makes sense. Like we got Jimmy. I think finding, you know, another cornerstone next to Steph for these last couple of years was crucial. That's the hard part. And these last couple of years have shown that, you know, it's been really hard, you know, after we won our title in 22. Last couple of years have been tough. We needed somebody like Jimmy. Well, we got him now. He's still really good. I think it's I think we're set up to go for it the next 2 years. But yeah, you don't give up, you know, four first and three swaps, and not when your guys are 37. So
yeah,
I think that's how we're operating. That's how Mike is operating. I think he's fantastic at his job, and my job is to, you know, coach the team and see.
All right, so there's Steve, coach the team and see what happens. He's being modest. Steve Kerr is part of the decision-making process. The way it works is, yeah, Mike Dunleavy is part of it. He's the general manager. Steve Kerr has earned, obviously, the respect of the front office. He's a loud voice in that conversation. And at the end of the day, Joe Lacob makes most of the major decisions. In other words, Jimmy Butler won't come here without an extension, and that was the case. And that's not Steve Kerr. That's not Mike Dunleavy. That's, Joe, can we have some money? And Joe says, in this case, yes, we'll go deeper into this, and we think that Jimmy's going to be something. And so that's what they did. I mentioned this briefly yesterday, but here's where they find themselves, and I think things are difficult. Here's where I might disagree with Steve Kerr at the beginning of those comments. And by the way, to see that entire conversation, just go to the Tom Tolbert Show channel or the Bay Area Sports Collective. Please make sure you're subscribed, have those alerts on, because then you know when Tom goes live. That was yesterday about 2 o'clock with Steve Kerr in Tolbert's backyard. But where I may disagree with Steve is, to me, it's not about what your future holds when Steph and Jimmy and Steve, et cetera, leave. This is the whole thing that's been a misconception about Kuminga, for example. They're going to be, okay, let's say they keep Kuminga, which they won't, but let's say they do. They're in the lottery with Kuminga without him for the next, I don't know how many X years after Steph leaves and everyone leaves. Steve says, oh, well, we can't give up picks and everything like that to get more players and this and that. Could you imagine what the future looks like? I got news for you, Steve. The future is going to look like shit with or without whatever picks you keep. You're going to be in the lottery without, with or without whatever picks you keep. Like, look at all these teams when they lose somebody to that significant level. And that's just where they go. It's the natural progression. Like, they've been lucky in that usually it's up and down. With the Warriors, it's been, I'll keep it up here. And they're staying high. They're staying high. It's like an airplane flying. And then it's not going to be like this. It's going to go. That's what it's going to do. You like the sound effects? That's what it's going to do. So whether you want to keep those picks and you draft somebody, and like I said, drafting guys is like throwing darts against a chalkboard or against a dartboard. Cooper Flagg's a really nice player. After pick two, I have no idea. I have no idea what these guys are going to do. You might get yourself a John Morant. You might, you know, look at Houston. They've been in the lottery forever. They finally just got decent again. Like, it just takes forever. You know, the Clippers and the Warriors and all those teams that were bad for so long, they had lottery picks year after year after year after year after year. You just have to get lucky sometimes. San Antonio got Robinson. They got Duncan. They got Kawhi. Like, it's just it's just luck a lot of times. Steph with a 7th overall pick. That's just pure luck. It's just what happens. Clay was, what, 11? Draymond was in the 2nd round. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to crash and burn without him. So my philosophy would be, look, you've got 2 years. And the goal is to not make the playoffs every year and stay here. The goal is to win a championship, and I'd rather win a championship, be up here, win a title, and then crash and burn. So, like, if I've got to give up first-round picks to surround Steph with the right players, I do it. If I have to move Jonathan Kuminga for a player who can play better now with size, because this team is greatly lacking size, we know that, and if I have to give up Kuminga and the other team demands a first-round pick, I do it. Because what's the goal of the sport? Championship. As I said, lots of the goal for a lot of these owners is keep the turnstiles moving. That's the Giants' goal, right? Turnstile, 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 turnstile. If we win, that's great, but turnstile, turnstile. So in other words, they don't want to go too high. They don't want to go too low. I mean, they'd like to go high, but it's got to naturally happen, right? They're not going to just go for it. Dodgers, they just go for it, 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 go for it. Now, I know the rules are different. I understand that, but they're willing to pay those penalties. But the way that the trajectory of a team goes is you stay up high, you burn out. You stay up high, you burn out. And then, you know, but there's those other teams who are just like, let's keep turnstiles moving. That's not the Warriors. So where I would disagree with Steve is, if in this offseason, you have this 2-year window, within this offseason, and I'm assuming Giannis doesn't come, I'm assuming, you know, Miles Turner is going to be really tough. Why would he leave the Pacers? All those kind of things. Realistic opportunities, and some of these names you may not like, but like a Bobby Portis, for example, he's a nice player. He's not great, but he would greatly enhance what they do. He's got a big body. So if you had to give up Kuminga and you had to give up a first round pick, well, that's, you're trying to, You're trying to get Steph a championship along with Jimmy Butler and Draymond Green. You want one more shot at glory. So whatever that player is, whoever that player is, yeah, Jaren Jackson Jr. would be great. Or Miles Turner would be great. Or Giannis would be the holy grail, right? But that's not likely to happen. What's likely to happen is Steven Adams, Bobby Portis. I mean, those kind of a thing. Like, okay, now you have some size and you might be able to make a run at this thing, but you had to give up a first round pick or you had to give up, Steven Adams is a free agent. Miles Turner is a free agent, all those kind of things. My point is that if you have to give up a first and mortgage more of the future, if you have to give up Kuminga, which whatever, they already really have given up on Kuminga, to be completely honest. They only used him emergency break glass. That's the only reason they used him in the playoffs, because Steph was hurt. He would have been chained to the bench otherwise. So they've already given up on him. He's going to get moved for size. But Steve says they don't want to mortgage the future anymore. Why not? Like, the goal is a championship. The goal isn't let's make sure we have some things to deal with after make sure we have some picks or anything like that. Whatever. Who cares? Like, you're going to be in the lottery and you're going to be really, 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 really bad. Now, that's not great for Joe Lacob. It's not great. I got to get people to chase center. I owe bills, this, that, and the other, all that. I get it. But if you do crash and burn, there are going to be players who will play because you'll give them the most money, and you'll probably be back in that same situation where, oh my God, I can't believe they gave Corey Maggette that much money. But you'll be in that situation because you'll have money, you won't have resources, whatever. If you lose those resources, but Steph wins a title and you win a title and there's another parade, who gives a shit what the future is? I don't care. Because the goal to me is to not win 50 games and get in as a four seed. The goal is to win a championship at all costs for the next 2 years. So if I have to give up first round picks for the next couple of years, I do it. There's certain teams that are in that position. But you know what you can do also is if you crash and burn, then you can trade those assets and get picks back. I mean, there's other ways to do it. So in this offseason for the Warriors, do I expect them to get Giannis? No. Do I expect them to get Miles Turner? No. Do I expect them to get Jaren Jackson Jr.? No, I don't. I expect them to get a realistic a target where people are going to go, I can't believe we traded Kuminga for that guy. But that guy is going to give them size, and they're not going to get dominated by Şengün and the offensive glass and Julius Randle. And that's the goal of the offseason. The goal of the offseason is don't get dominated by size anymore. And whatever you got to do and whoever you got to do, because you have a 2-year window, that's it. Jimmy, Steph, Steve, Draymond, 2 years. Now we have a timeline, an exact timeline. We didn't used to have that. It was like, when's Steph leaving? It's 2 years. Now he may play beyond 2 years. I don't know. But the realistic goal of Steph Curry going into age 38 and Jimmy going into age 36 and Draymond going into age 35 is 2 years. That's it. That's the window. It's 2 years. So it's kind of like, we knew at the end of the Bulls, for example, I covered those teams. I've told you that a million times. We knew that was it. Jerry Krause said that was it. The general manager of the Bulls said, this is it. That's why it was called Last Dance. Everybody knew it. That's why, when I was in the locker room covering the Bulls, everybody knew this was it. You're trying to get every bit. You're trying to squeeze every ounce of it because this is it. This is the last time these guys are going to be together. And they didn't like each other. I've told that story a million times. They're all in different places. They won the title, and there's Jordan with a group over there, and there's Rodman with Carmen Electra, and there's Pippen with his group over there. And then there's the guys in the middle like Steve Kerr and Jed Buschler, and they're dancing up together, but the team wasn't together. And I've been in championship locker rooms before where they're all dancing and pouring champagne. That wasn't the case. They were done. We knew it. Same thing with the Warriors. This is their last dance, and then they're going to have an encore on top of that, and that's it. 2 years, that's it. So whatever you need to do within those 2 years, because winning a title is everything. So that at the end of this, when they do the documentary and they talk to Joe Lacob, Joe can say, we milked every drop out of this thing. Every drop. At every turn. What do you need? I'll pay the money. What do you need? I'll give that guy an extension. What do you need? Okay, fine. Jimmy Butler gets money and I go deeper into the luxury tax. Fine. Fine, 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 fine. So these last 2 years, what are you going to do? Stop doing that? I can't give up that first round pick. I can't give up Kuminga. Like, they're already down this road. You've already committed to it. So you're not going to commit to it 90%. You're going to commit to it 100%, which means We're giving up Kuminga for size. If we have to give up that first round pick, we're doing it. Like, you're just, you know, that future pick swap, we're doing it. Like, okay. Because at the end of the day, when, you know, whomever would, someone's going to write a column that says, God, the Warriors really should have kept some resources they should have thought about tomorrow. Who cares? How many times you get into Steph Curry? Never again. How many times you get in a run like this? Never again. So you milk it till you run it till the wheels fall off. You run it into the ground. That's what you do. They've already committed to it. That whole two timeline thing, we can win, we can be young. That's gone. That's way gone. So now what you do is you put the pedal to the metal and you fly off that cliff. And when it's time to worry about that, you'll worry about it tomorrow. You know, it's kind of like you're having a massive party and you know you have that big presentation in the morning and you either decide you're going to bed early and you're going to be fresh as a daisy in the morning, or you're going to just stay up all night. And the Warriors are going to stay up all night. They've already decided. They're staying up all night. They're not worrying about it. We're just going to go straight to the meeting. Like, we're burning it. We're burning it. We're going. We didn't stay home. We're not doing a two-timeline thing. Like, you know, love Steve, respect Steve, but... And he's like, why would we burn the assets? It's like, because you've already made the decision. You've already made the choice. Like, that's happening. All right, give me your thoughts on the Warriors as far as OKC game one. They blow out Minnesota. That was not the Minnesota team that we saw against the Warriors. But again, OKC with Chet Holmgren and the type of depth they have on the bench and the type of things that they can do. The one thing I would say, and this is just the NBA, I'm watching that game in the fourth quarter. And I'm watching Chris Finch and, you know, 10 minutes, 9 minutes, 8 minutes. And Anthony Edwards is sitting on the bench and I'm going, okay, you're down 10. I know it's in every other game series. Kid's what, 22, 23 years old? He's fine. And I hate making references to Kobe or Jordan or any of those kind of things. Those guys are playing 45 minutes in game one. Like, it's a tone setting game. You're on their court. You're within 10. You're within distance. And then Edwards comes in and there's like, I don't know, 7-8 minutes left in the game and he can't get a rhythm. And I don't even know that he scored in the fourth quarter. If he did, it was irrelevant. I don't think he scored, but it was like, the guy's got to get a rhythm. Like, he's a rhythm player. He's got to get in there and he's got to get in a rhythm and you're just waiting. It's like, what the hell are you waiting for? Dante DiVincenzo to shoot up some more, throw up some more bricks. Like, he's not saving your season. What is he doing in there? He's had a terrible playoff in general, the former Warrior. Like, Anthony Edwards should be in the game right now, beginning of the fourth quarter. And then, if you know, that's what these coaches do all the time. Well, you know, I don't want them to get tired. I don't want to burn them out. Well, you know what? Because the game was such a blowout, you took them out at the 4 minute mark anyway. Like, put them in there so that if you're in the game, then fine. You'd rather have that problem to go, oh my God, there's 4 minutes left in the game. Anthony Edwards might be tired, but hell, we're within four. All of a sudden, adrenaline kicks in with that guy. He's one of the best players in the league. Coaches mismanage games in the NBA all the time in the playoffs. Dude should be playing 45 minutes. He's 22, 23 years old. What are you waiting for? Oh, we don't want to make him too tired. Well, at 4 minutes, you're down 20 anyway. Go give him a rest. Stupid way to coach, especially in game one. Knicks and Pacers coming up tonight. That is going to be a really good series. I expect the Knicks, though, to win that. They're just something about them. And somebody hit me up the other day because I said, I think the Knicks should be favored. They're not favored. Oklahoma City's favored. But I'll tell you right now, if Knicks and OKC played in the finals, which I expect it to be, I think the Knicks are going to win. I just think they're on one of those rolls. MVP is going to be announced tonight in the NBA. It's going to be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And in the playoffs, Jokic wasn't great against OKC to his standards, if you're grading on a curve. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was better. Jokic had the better regular season, but we as a media, we get bored of giving the guy the trophy again and again and again. And I've told you the stories about Jordan, and he got to the finals, and it was always like, well, you know, Karl Malone's the MVP, not me, as I'm just crushing you. But he loved it. He used it. So I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will be the MVP. I'd vote for Jokic. I'm not saying Jokic had the better playoffs between the two, but regular season-wise, the guy was ridiculous. Random thoughts. I haven't had a lot of random thoughts today. I got to be honest with you. I do have a really good caboose for you today that I think is hilarious. This is something on the MVP. Did you see this last night? This is all going viral last night. Mike Malone has been hired by ESPN, the former Nuggets coach, and this is what he said post-game last night.
Alexander, he showed why he's the MVP. And then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, He showed why he's the MVP.
All season long, he's sitting there, Jokic. ESPN gives him a forum. Oh, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander showed why he's the MVP. Man, that changed quick. Taking a shot at Jokic? I'm sure Jokic texted him. Bro, the hell, bro? 1 minute, the Mickey Mouse hires you, the mouse hires you, and you throw me under the bus like that? Bro, what's up with that? Then he did it. It's what happens. It's what happens, man. Let me see here. Oh, let me play a Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol open for you, because we actually have a Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol story, which I think is hilarious. And plus, it gives me a reason to tell a story as well, to have a Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol. The story's good. I even think the story that I'm going to tell you because of it is actually even better. Here it is right here. Let's do this.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose Pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
The old Caboose Pistol. Everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose Pistol?
I know some women who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John. Here's John.
All right, the story's good. So let me play the story for you, and then I've got a story on top of this story. And it's not that I... No, maybe. Maybe I played this. It was an excuse to tell this story. But this is kind of cool. So Indy 500, they're going to have a wiener mobile race. Look at this. They call it the Weenie 500. Let me make sure my mic is working. Yeah. They're calling it the Weenie 500, and they're going to have Wiener Mobiles race at at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which this just tells you, first of all, this tells you where we are as a society. Like, that's a hallowed track, and they're going to let Wiener Mobiles race on said track. Now, it just tells you, it's like, how much is it going to cost? I'm Oscar Mayer. How much is it going to cost for us to race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? And they're like, here's the number. I'm like, okay. I mean, in the millions, right? Millions and millions and millions. I'm like, whatever. You want to race Wiener Mobiles? Go for it. So whatever. But so that's funny. Funny story. It's going to be a big deal. Oscar Mayer gets a ton out of it. Good for them. Smart. But the reason that I play that, beyond the fact that, I don't know, if you're of a certain age, and you'd see one of those Wiener Mobiles, like when I grew up in Southern California, you would actually see a Wiener Mobile, and it was just a wild, anyway, and you could ride in that thing and everything. It's weird. I don't know. It'd be weird to drive one of those things, especially if you're going to race those things. But anyway, point is that I don't remember which Super Bowl this was. It was in Indianapolis, and it was the Giants versus the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And I covered it in Indianapolis. And what they do is they have these media parties at each Super Bowl. And some are better than others. The one in New Orleans is off the hook. I mean, the food, and you walk through there, and it's just, it's unbelievable. The food, the drink, it's all free. And it's symbolic, obviously, of the city that it's in. So it's got all sorts of great food and drinks and everything. The one in Arizona a few years ago was out in the middle of the desert. I mean, they literally take you on buses to the middle of the desert, and they drop you off. And it was colder than I thought. I didn't know it was going to be outside. And so here we are tromping through the desert, but they had all these food and cigar bars, and it was really cool. And each city wants to show off their food and their drink, and their, you know, there's bands, and it's really cool. And the NFL throws it for the media so that we'll say nice things about them. New York's was off the hook. New Orleans is a great one. Vegas had like race cars. It was really cool. I mean, Vegas for Vegas, I thought was a little underwhelming, but still it's really, really good. Had different levels, but as crazy as this sounds, the best one I've ever been to of all these cities, and I've covered on Radio Row probably 15 to 20 Super Bowls. The best one I ever went to, I swear to you, was Indianapolis. And what was crazy about it was they take you out to the Speedway, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and the tower is right next to the Speedway. And so for each level of the speedway, they had a different
theme in each area. And it was, I don't know, four or five stories high or whatever it was. But the thing that's the coolest is, so you go out there, right? And they have all these different race cars from each NFL team. It was really, really cool. So each team had a an Indy car painted for their team, and you take a picture by it and all that kind of stuff. You could sit in it, which was amazing. Like, you could sit in this thing. Obviously couldn't start it and go around the track. That would have been amazing. But I'm sitting in this like Raiders one. I sat in a Niners one. It was awesome. And then you go have a few drinks, and I'll tell you about the drinks in just a second. But you do the drinks, and then you can kiss the bricks. And it, what's funny about it is, you know, when they win the Indy 500, they go down and they kiss the bricks, right? That's the starting line, which was amazing. You take a picture and all this kind of stuff. So that was really cool. You're at Indy Motor Speedway. Then you go inside, and for each level, like I said, they have different drinks. So the first level was the coolest thing ever. The first level was, I think it was beers and cigars. No, cigars was more scotch later. But anyway, they had one level, and there's tons of great food and everything. But I remember you had to put these gloves on, right? And I'm like, why are we putting on gloves? Because they had these freezers, and they were ice mugs. Mugs made of ice with the, you know, the handle and everything like that. And you had to put these gloves on because they were so cold, and they would pour you a, you know, out of a, obviously a keg or whatever, a beer. And the thing was so damn cold, and you had ice gloves on with an ice mug, and you're drinking this beer. Unbelievable. So, you know, think of like a summer day, and it's like, it's so hot out, and you drink a beer and how good it tastes. Think of that times a million, because I mean, this thing was like frozen in your mouth. It was almost like a beer slushy. It was so freaking good. And I don't remember what kind of food they had, but every level had a theme. Then you go up to the next level, like the second level, take the elevator up. And I'm a huge bourbon and whiskey fan. So they had this bourbon tasting level with food that would obviously accent, I don't remember any of the food, that would accent the bourbon. And they had all these different kind of, you know, classic and great. And, you know, try this and try this and try this. And then you'd have some food to, you know, cleanse your palate. It was done perfectly. Unbelievable. Then you go up to the next level, and it was scotch and cigars. And I told you before, I'm not a huge scotch guy, but it just worked that night. And so you're doing scotch and cigars. And then you go up to the final level, and it was like this big dessert station and after dinner drinks and all this kind of stuff and cognacs and all this kind of stuff. I mean, by the time you do that, you're just like, oh my God, like it was unbelievable. I'm thinking, and you know, it's massive and all this kind of stuff. And I just remember like going back on the bus going, that was the coolest thing. And that might've been like only like the fourth or fifth Super Bowl that I had ever covered. And I thought, well, I'm sure it's going to get better. And don't get me wrong, New Orleans, amazing. New York, amazing. Arizona in the middle of the desert, amazing. Like these media parties that they had. But that Indianapolis one was awesome. So anyway, I play this thing about the awesome Wienermobile. Oops, let me do this again. So they're going to rate this, right? Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So let's see when they show the bricks there. So you see that tower right there? That's the tower. It was in that tower. Pause this thing for a second. So then you open it up. They had all these cars in there. You can see, oh, that's the other part I forgot. They had all these cool cars. And that's where all the, you know, the NFL cars. So hang on a second. Let me see if I can. The Weenie 500. So like right, you know, they got the bricks right there so you could kiss the bricks and go back to that tower because I forgot they put that tower there. So right there. So that was the tower that the party was in. So you're right there is the bricks, you're kissing the bricks. And then, well, there's like four levels and you go in there and that's where the party was. So you're overlooking Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And like I said, at every level, they have this different cool stuff. And then all around and in that garage part, they had all the NFL Indy cars and you could sit in an Indy car. It was cool. And like I said, I'm not, you know, I'm not your gearhead or anything like that, but that was cool. That was really, really cool. So there you go. That's my story. And that's the whole reason that I played that because I wanted to tell you that story. It was amazing. Very, very cool. All right. Episode 145, Brock Talks New Deal, 1:30 this afternoon. I will there shortly thereafter cut those cuts up for you and have comments about it. So make sure your alerts are on at John Lund Unleashed. Does three signings save the offseason for the 49ers? Brock, Kittle, Warner. Birdsong solid. Hopefully he can solidify starting spot number three. Can't keep doing this. I showed you this before if you just joined the show late. That's the Giants. Catcher in first base at the top there. Five home runs, 37 RBIs last. 61 at 332 at 184 batting average between those two positions, last. OPS 552 between catcher and first base, last. 107 strikeouts. They strike out about a third of the time. Wilmer Flores, just at first base, 5 for 14, 4 home runs, 9 RBIs, hitting 357 with 1541 OPS. So if you take him out of the mix at first base and catcher, home run, 23 RBIs, 176 batting average, and 407 OPS. And if you take him out just at first base, 27 for 155, 1 home run, 14 RBIs, 174 batting average with 392 OPS without Flores. Flores in 14 at-bats has more production than the rest of the players who have played first base in 155 at-bats. Buster, do something. And as I said right there, you can't keep doing this. Kerr and Tolbert, that was great from the backyard. If you want to hear or see the whole conversation, just go to the Bay Area Sports Collective. Make sure you go to Bay Area Sports Collective on YouTube, and you can watch that entire conversation, which was really good. OKC game one, that was not the Minnesota team we saw. Knicks and Pacers tonight. MVP is going to be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander tonight. Random things always happen throughout the show. And the Sweet Clean Family Friendly Caboose Pistol, the Weenie 500, which just gave me an excuse to tell the story about the media party in Indianapolis at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Is that all? I think that's it, probably. All right. So, like I said, make sure that you have those alerts on, please, please, please. And I will talk to you later today after Brock speaks. And then also, like I said, I have that whole thing where I went down a rabbit hole on Brock Purdy's 17-game averages versus other quarterbacks, and yet the national media still says he shouldn't have been paid this money. They just aren't paying attention, and they're being selective in the way that they are looking at the numbers. Anything else I need to give you today? I think that's it. After you go Weenie 500, where else can you really go? All right. Thank you so much for making the time today. We always appreciate things. Make sure that you are not only watching, but please subscribe. John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. The Bay Area Sports Collective on YouTube as well. Those are two separate channels. Please make sure you're subscribed to both. Thank you today for watching on Instagram. Thanks for watching on X at John Lund Radio. Thanks for watching on LinkedIn and Facebook as well. If you would at some point migrate over to John Lund Unleashed on YouTube, that would be great. Please, before you get out of here, give us that like. Would love it if you would give us the like. Please get those alerts on so that you know when we're going to be jumping on later today. And any comments, questions, thoughts, you don't have to agree with me, and that is totally fine. I love being able to go, oh, you know what? That's a great point. Or you're such a jackass. No, I don't say the latter. But thank you so much. We appreciate it. Please put your comments underneath the show. We'll see you in the comments. And you can hit me up also at John Lund Radio on X, your choice. Everybody have a great rest of your morning. I'll see you after Brock speaks this afternoon. Happy hump day.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!